Blog Talk Radio.
Afternoon, whatever you want to call this awkward time on Sunday, and hope you're enjoying whatever's left of your weekend. I'm your host, Joe Perrello, and welcome into Taking You to School, formerly the only college basketball show on the RF Sports Radio Network. Now we're talking a little NBA, some NBA draft, things of that nature, but obviously the major topic of conversation is going to be the off-season NBA moves going on right now. I'm joined, as always, by my colleague at sweetsports.com, that's S-U-I-T-E. Sports.com, Mr. Jeremy Conlon. He also contributes to BuzzFeed and has contributed to the ESPN True Hoop Network, but I believe he's back on it running for knickerblogger.net. Jeremy, first of all, glad to have you with us this week, but second of all, could you maybe talk to us about your new position and kind of what you're going to be doing?
I'm writing for knickerblogger.net, which is the mixed blog on the ESPN True Hoop Network, and I'm still working out how involved I'm going to be with what they do, but I had a few things up already in the last week or so, so you can check those out. I'm excited to be once again a member of the True Hoop Network.
Yeah, well, who wouldn't be? It's obviously a pretty cool thing that ESPN does with all the different blogs on the different teams and connecting them together, and they get you to contribute every now and then on the ESPN homepage and stuff. So it's a really, really cool thing. We also welcome in our buddy from RoundBallDaily.com, one of the best hoops blogs on the net. Mr. Kells Dayton. Kells, I don't know if that was your phone ringing earlier. I know you're a busy guy, but how are you doing today?
No, it wasn't my phone, Joe, but I'm doing pretty good. I wish it was. I need to get busier.
Don't we all? I watched a couple of your videos this week. I saw you arguing about A-Rod and about steroids and how we care more about steroids in baseball than we do in football, but neither of those are our sports, but I just wanted to say nice video.
Thanks, man. Yeah, I think it's interesting how basketball has no steroids issues going on there. I think, I don't know if anything's behind the curtain or anything, that might be for a different show, but.
Yeah, and I've always been kind of interested in that because, you know, David Stern and other NBA guys have come out and basically said, like, why would we need steroids? Our guys aren't on steroids. They're all, you know, it's better to be lean and athletic and bouncy and things like that. But, I mean, you know. Shaq was dominant for reasons other than being lean and bouncy, so it's obviously not a one-size-fits-all kind of thing with this issue. But either way, we'll move on to talk about kind of the one big off-season move that's happened lately. You know, we've beaten Dwight Howard to death. We've talked about all those moves. But I want to talk about Luis Scola heading to the Indianapolis Pacers from the Phoenix Suns. They sent away to get him Gerald Green, who I don't even know was still in the NBA until these last playoffs, and Miles Plumlee, and a lottery-protected first-round pick, which obviously isn't as good as a non-lottery-protected first-round pick. Scola, you know, solid player. He's been consistent. He's been durable. Jeremy, I'll go to you first. You know, a lot has been made. The Pacers, obviously, one game away from the NBA Finals, and they get Danny Granger back, but also the Bulls get Derrick Rose back, and they've made some moves. Where does this put the Pacers in the hierarchy of the East right now?
I still think that they're a tier below the Heat. It seems like it's Miami and everybody else in the East. But, you know, based on last year's playoffs, they seem to be at the top of that group among, you know, Chicago, New York, the rest of those teams. So in terms of this move specifically, I'm not sure it's that much of an upgrade on them because, like, is he really that much than Tyler Hansbrough? Like, I'm not sure that he is. Like, he's...
You're right. You don't think he's that much better than Hansbrough?
I mean, he's a better rebounder, and he's, like, more skilled offensively, but he's terrible defensively, whereas Hansbrough can actually, like, move and cover screens and stuff like that. You know, playing him next to Hibbert or Jan Mahimi will cover up some of his defensive weaknesses, but he's not that much better than Hansbrough that this is, like, a huge, huge upgrade for them. He'll eat into the minutes that Jeff Pendergraft played, but those were already going to get eaten up by Danny Granger when they would play him at the four. But really going forward, the upgrade that they have is that Danny Granger's healthy. It's not that they upgraded from Hansgrohe to Scola, which is it's a smart move, but it's not, you know, it's the difference between them being a 52-win team and a 54-win team. It's really not a huge upgrade, and I'm not sure it helps them specifically against the Heat. I don't know if that changes the matchups at all. What's going to be the difference for them is when they can go small with Stevenson, George, and Granger. Like, that's the lineup that they need to play against the Heat to win. And Scola's not going to be involved in that. They're going to play Hibbert or West at the five there. So, like, Scola's a good player, and he'll fit in well, but I'm not sure that this is a – it doesn't really move the needle much for them, I don't think.
Okay, fair enough. And Kels, first of all, your opinion on that, but also, you know, Gerald Green, no one really cares about seeing him go. But how about sending away a first-round pick and a guy like Miles Plumlee, who we really don't know what he is yet for a guy like Scola?
Yeah, I think Miles Plumlee, basically, he's size right now. Like, that's all he is at this point in his career. And I think Scola, I think I'm a little more high on the move than Jeremy is, because I think you take a look at him, he's a good shooter, he's a good passer. They could play a little bit of high-low maybe with Roy Hibbert, with him maybe at the top of the key and Hibbert down low. Maybe give the ball to Scola. He can throw it down in there to Hibbert a little bit more. And I think it just presents a little more matchup problems on offense. I agree. He's not a great defender, but I think the fact that he gives them a little more versatility on offense, kind of like maybe the same kind of role that David West does as well, but he gives you another guy who's another good passer. And I think they definitely improve their team by adding him. I think losing Gerald Green doesn't do anything. I think it's going to be interesting what happens with Danny Granger and Paul George, because I think they're basically like the same player. I don't know how they're going to fit together next year. So maybe might have thought of maybe trading Granger and maybe trying to get something else back that could have helped them a little bit more getting past Miami possibly in the playoffs. So I think they make themselves a little bit better, but I'm not sure if they put themselves over the top with this goal move.
Okay, that's fair enough. I think what I'm kind of hearing from both of you and kind of thoughts on it too are, you know what? He's a good player. You know, he's been a double-digit scoring guy. He doesn't miss games, so, you know, you have that. But, Jeremy, I want to go back to you. Hypothetical situation, other than adding LeBron James to their team or something ridiculous like that, what is the piece that the Pacers need to get to the level of the Heat? I mean, is there a piece, you know, hypothetically that they could add that would be out there?
Well, before I get to that, my one other observation is that the Suns traded for the worst brother again. They recently traded for Luke Zeller, and they recently traded for who else? They have a series of having the worst brother out of a number of players, and once again they
They had both Hansgroves on their team for a while too.
So so this is just another example of that. But in terms of like, I'm not sure that there is a piece out there that they could get. Like, if you want to take, like, I don't think Granger is that tradable at this point. I don't think he has that much value just because he's not that great to begin with. He's a good player, but he's not a superstar. And because he's coming off a huge injury and he's an expiring contract, he doesn't have much value in terms of bringing in new talent. So the best case scenario for Indiana is that Paul George makes this leap and becomes, you know, sort of like a young Kobe-type player where he's a true on both ends. Like, he is that level on defense. He's a superstar on defense. But he gets a little bit out of control when he plays pick-and-roll offensively. He's better as a spot-up shooter. Like, if he really develops his off-the-dribble game and can really create offense consistently to the point where Indiana has a top-10 offense as opposed to, like, the, you know, 16th or 17th best offense, that's what they need to potentially upset the Heat. It's not going to be a question of them going out and adding a new piece. It's going to be all of their young developing players like Stevenson, Hill, and George, like, sort of taking a step to the next level. Like, if all three of those guys get 10 to 15% better in the next year, then they'll probably beat the Heat, just because the Heat seem to be sort of old and decrepit by the time the playoffs roll around. It's been that way for 2 years now. But just the likelihood of that happening seems to be pretty low, just because it's a tough hurdle to climb to get to that championship level without a superstar. So they need George to take that leap. And if he can't do that, then this is basically their tapped out.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of have a limited ceiling when you don't have a guy that's playing that level on both ends. And you talk about the Heat, they're kind of, you know, they're limited because they play a little small. That's when they're at their best. But they have, you know, two true superstars, including the best player on the planet. Meanwhile, the Pacers are kind of more of a complete team, but just don't have that one guy that can really push them over the top. Kells, I want to go to you kind of in the same vein. You know, he mentioned just, you know, their young guy is improving. But with most people seem to think, like, the way to beat the Heat is, oh, man, you know, they don't have great size, so you got to have a big guy in the middle to defend, and you got to have a guy that can score on the inside and give them some problems. You know, the Pacers have all that. So what is it? I won't even ask you to give me a player, but what is it that, you know, specifically the Pacers really need to improve on to kind of take that next step?
I think they just need more experience, Joe. I think maybe Paul George getting more experience down the stretch in games, maybe becoming a closer. Because I think what happened to them last year, not with Game 7 notwithstanding, I think, was that they didn't have a guy at the end of the game who could really close it out. And I think Paul George, he did. Sometimes he was able to make that big shot. He made that big shot, I think it was Game 1 or 2 or whatever it was, that LeBron ended up making the layup at the end that Hibbert wasn't in there for. But they don't have a guy that they can go to in the fourth quarter that just consistently gets them baskets and consistently one-ups them. Like, George is a really good player, but he's not a great player. And I think that's the difference between them and even when you look at the Spurs. They're kind of similar teams, but you look at the Spurs and they have Tony Parker. They have Tim Duncan, obviously, who are great players and who can make big shots down the stretch. So I think that's really what they need. They need to get better. Everyone needs to improve. And I think if Paul George takes that next step into really superstardom, then I think they've got a chance to win the championship. Aside from that, I think maybe they need to get a guy who can come in and do that for them. I'm not sure who would be out there who would be able to do it, but just a guy at the end of the game who can take those big shots and make them and push them on to the next round.
You know, I've looked, and no one has signed Robert Horry this year, so I think he might be available. I think they might be able to get Big Shot Bob, come on in and just make a few clutch playoff shots and not actually do anything in the regular season. That's a definite possibility. As for Scola, like, look, you know, the guy doesn't miss games. He gets you double-digit scoring when he starts. Not particularly rugged. He's a pretty good rebounder, not a great rebounder. I mean, like you guys said, I don't see this pushing them past the Heat. I don't even know if it pushes them past a Derrick Rose healthy Bulls, but they have, again, an intriguing young roster. If those guys develop, Indiana's going to be a force for a while now in the East. Moving on, another guy that has some deep playoff runs in him, Gary Neal. He just got a 2-year deal with the Bucks. You know, he's a point guard. He's a good 3-point shooter. The Bucks right now, you know, they lost Monta Ellis to Dallas. They've got Brandon Jennings still kind of hanging in limbo there. Kells, what do you make of this signing, and what does it mean for them to bring back Brandon Jennings? Does it mean they're going to bring him back and try to play 2-point guards again, or are they kind of banking on Gary Neal being their guy?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure if I would bank on Gary Neal being my guy. I mean, he had a great run in the finals, but, I mean, I don't know if he can sustain that over the regular season. I think we've seen guys before, obviously, that have had, you know, great finals performances. I'm trying to think of a guy right now, but I'm coming up blank right now. But I don't think
Robert
Brandon
Horry?
Jennings is going to be, you could say Robert Horry, I guess. Yeah, that would be a great point. But I think, when you look at, like, Brandon Jennings and his impact on what the Bucks are trying to do, it's like I don't think that he's going to be able to take them to the next level either. So it's kind of like they're kind of stuck in the NBA purgatory where they kind of need to get worse in order to get better. And I think it's kind of, you know, I wouldn't pay max money for Brandon Jennings because he's supposed to be a point guard, but he plays like a shooting guard. He doesn't pass the ball enough. He's not good enough at making decisions. So I think they're in a tough spot right now, and they kind of – for years, they've kind of been in the middle of the road in the NBA, and I think they kind of need to bottom out and kind of start over and maybe hopefully get something through the draft that can launch them into contention.
Yeah, and if there was ever a year to do that, I think a lot of teams are going to be thinking about tanking this year. It's supposed to be a great draft coming up in 2014. Jeremy, I want to go to you on this issue, and first of all, Brandon Jennings, but also that issue of basketball purgatory. We always talk about it, and it's seemingly a pretty real thing where the worst thing you want to be is the last team in the playoffs. You know, is that where the Bucks are, or have they just not realized their potential yet? And do you think bringing Brandon Jennings back, do you think that's going to happen?
Well, I think the most likely scenario is that they just sign Jennings for his qualifying offer.
Qualifying offer, yeah.
he'll be, or no, he is a restricted free agent right now.
Yes.
So they'll sign him for, they'll sign the qualifying offer and he'll be unrestricted next season. That's what's most likely going to happen. I don't think, he basically has no leverage right now, and it seems like they don't want him back that badly. So him getting a multi-year deal the way, Jeff Teague did in Atlanta, I don't think that's going to happen. So I think they're going to just roll him over for one more year and then see what happens next summer. I don't think Gary Neal is going to be their point guard. I think he's going to be their third guard, and they're going to go with Jennings if they re-sign him, which seems likely, and then O.J. Mayo as shooting guard. But like you said, they seem to be in that position where they're either the last team in the playoffs or the first team out of it. Cleveland and Detroit are also going to be in that mix this year. Maybe even Toronto if Rudy Gay has a really good season. But obviously the Celtics are going to drop out. Philly was the ninth seed last year. They're going to drop probably to the bottom of the conference.
Yeah.
Atlanta might, they'll probably stick in the playoffs around the same spot. But it's going to be Milwaukee, Cleveland, Detroit, Toronto fighting for those last two playoff spots, the 7 and 8 seeds. And Milwaukee, I would have to put Milwaukee on the outside at this point. But the thing with them is their ownership has always been in the position that they would rather be competitive and a potential playoff team than bottoming out. And the reason for that is they're always looking for tickets, and they don't think it's worth the long-term investment to bottom out and be a non-profitable team for 2-3 years while they suck. They don't think that's worth it because they're really going year to year. Every single year there's a rumor that they might be the next team to move. So they need to be competitive to sell tickets. That's the mandate that their ownership has given them. And for a group that wants to keep the team in Milwaukee, I think that's a defensible position. My guess is that they're going to try to replicate this Indiana route where they really luck out with a guy in the draft, and it seems like they did that with Larry Sanders. He seems to be a real, potential defensive superstar the way, Tyson Chandler is. He's in the upper echelon of big men defenders in the league. So if he can develop an offensive game, then they could, maybe take a step towards being a competitive playoff team year in, year out, as opposed to just being playoff fodder for Miami to sweep. If that's what their motto is, they need to start looking for high potential guys in the draft. And John Henson seems to be a guy that can fit that model. And then the guys that they picked up in the draft this year, they seem to be long-term projects that could blossom into potential stars. That seems to be their motto, and they, seem to be sort of on the right track. But for right now, it just seems like they're treading water. But that's really what they want to do.
Yeah, I guess you bring up a good point that I hadn't even really considered that, in a market like Milwaukee, you can't totally bottom out because there's no one's going to go to the game, you're not going to turn a profit, and you're not already a super profitable team. So it puts, that's another disadvantage of the NBA. The small market teams are at a disadvantage for a plethora of reasons, not just that, superstars don't want to sign there necessarily. You mentioned a couple other teams. You mentioned Cleveland. You mentioned Detroit that'll be fighting for the bottom of the East. But they're both teams with seemingly young budding stars and seem like decent destinations for free agents next year. And I think their fan bases are actually would be excited to see them in the 7 or 8 spot rather than, I don't think Bucks fans will exactly get exhilarated if their team goes in as the 8 seed and gets blasted again. But I think Cleveland fans, obviously, after the whole decision and LeBron leaving, are ready to see their team back in the playoffs, even if it's just a 7 or 8. And I think Detroit fans are kind of feeling the same way, and they've got to feel pretty good about that front court that is sort of coming of age now, so to speak. Speaking of front courts and age, not really coming of age, but let's just talk about age. The Rockets just signed Marcus Camby to a one-year deal. Toronto released him this. They'll still owe him about $7.5 million. So the majority of his money is going to come from Toronto, who bought him out. But he's going to get about a $1.25 million or $1.4 million, something like that, or whatever the veteran minimum is, from the Rockets. And, Kels, I'll go to you. What does Marcus Camby have left in the tank, and if Omer Asik does leave, will he be a serviceable backup for Dwight Howard in Houston?
I think Marcus Camby has about as much left in the tank as I do every time I take my mom's car. I never refill it. I don't think there's anything left in the tank with Marcus Camby. I think basically like his role could be like a Juwan Howard in Miami kind of thing. He just like basically coaches Dwight Howard from the bench and basically like in practice maybe pushes him a little bit harder than like he would have been pushed otherwise. But I don't think Marcus Camby has much left. He's kind of like one of those guys with the Knicks when you look at Kenyon Martin last year who signed there and like he doesn't have much left either. So I think it's just one of those signings that hopefully you're looking for off-the-court stuff. You're looking for, like, maturity and those kind of things, leadership with him rather than anything that he's going to bring on the court.
Yeah, fair enough, and that's certainly a defensible point. But, again, their backup center wants out, doesn't want to play with Dwight Howard, so he could potentially end up being the guy that gives Howard relief, which and given Dwight Howard's recent history of injuries, you really don't want to see him play a lot of minutes is the point, and hopefully that doesn't have to happen. But, Jeremy, what say you about this signing? Jeremy, you there? I think you just faded out on us.
I think Camby's going to be the emergency big man. I wouldn't expect him to play major minutes. He played in Houston in 2012 and played about 500 minutes, which is not a totally small sample. I mean, it's small, but it's not extremely small. And he actually played really well. But then, like, last year he was obviously injured for most of the season and shot 32% from the floor. So, he's basically washed up at this point. If he's playing, 6 minutes a game in games that don't really matter, like, you could do a lot worse. But they're not going to be high leverage minutes by any stretch of the imagination. I agree with Kels. He's going to be mostly on the bench working with Howard to improve shot blocking timing, like sort of getting that part of his game back that he lost with the injury and sort of helping him get back into that to be the defensive player that he was in Orlando. But he really couldn't be last year because of the injury. Like, I think that's going to be the primary focus for Camby. Like you said, Asik wants to get traded, but Houston's been pretty adamant that they don't want to trade him. They're content to pay him $8 million to only play, 18 minutes a game. But I think at some point during the season, a trade is going to present itself that's going to be really tough for them to say no to. Like, if they can get, like, a Ron Anderson-type player who's a good rebounder but is also a really good shooter, that would fit in perfectly with their system. If Golden State is looking to move AMC, that's someone that could fit in with what Houston does. Like, he's a really good handler and passer from the power forward spot. And Howard would obviously cover up a lot of his defensive weaknesses. Like, if one of those types of players is available, I think they would look to move Asik. But for now, it seems like Asik's going to be their backup big man, and then Camby's just going to be, break in case of emergency with the glass coating in front of his face. I think that's the only way that he gets on the floor.
Fair enough, and for his sake and Houston's sake, I certainly hope that is indeed the case. Guys, last thing before we call it a day. We got 7 minutes left. I want to get the final word on the rookies. We've broken down the draft. We've broken down who's going to make the biggest impact. We're talking about the Summer League. I'm kind of done talking about rookies after today, so I want to go to Kels first on this because you're our college basketball guru. First question, who's going to have the best rookie season? And then second, who's going to end up having the best career out of the class of 2013?
Man, that's a tough one, Joe. I think for rookie of the year, I think I'm going to narrow it down right here. I think Victor Oladipo would be my number one choice because of how well he fit in. I know Summer League doesn't mean a lot, but he really looked good. I think he can definitely contribute to Orlando, and they don't have really that many guys who are going to take the ball out of his hands. So I think his points per game averages and stuff like that could be high enough to get him the Rookie of the Year award. And then as far as career goes, I mean, there's a lot of guys with upside that you look at, maybe like an Alex Len from Maryland or someone like even if you talk about Nerlens Noel, who everyone thought before the draft could be the number one pick. I think upside, like those guys fit in as much as possible for, you know, who's going to have the best career. Also, I think Ben McLemore, if he didn't get drafted by the Kings, I would say that he maybe would have the best career, but I think they have a chance to really ruin his career with the way that they develop players. So I got to say right now, I think I'm really thinking Victor Oladipo might be the answer to both questions. I think he's going to end up being a really solid player, and in that draft, how bad it was, that might be the best player that comes out of the draft.
I like how the caveat or the one thing is, you know, I really like McLemore, but the Kings draft. So, fair enough, fair enough. Jeremy, what about you? Who do you think will end up having the best rookie year and who will end up having the best career?
I'm going to say something that's both obvious and unusual. I think the number one pick in the draft is going to have the best year of all the rookies. Like, it seems like people have panned the Bennett pick at number one, but it's mostly been because it was unexpected.
Yeah.
I mean, there were a lot of people out there that said Bennett is the best player in terms of right now for immediate impact. And I'm not sure I disagree with them. Like he has an NBA skill set that he could potentially play the three if he loses some weight and adds some quickness. But also he has the bulk and the muscle to play the four, shooting stroke to play sort of a stretch four role. So fitting him next to Andrew Bynum makes a lot of sense. Like, I think he could have a real good impact there. He probably won't start just because they're going to probably go with Bynum and Tristan Thompson. But I think he'll probably play 20, 24 minutes per game, and I think he's going to have a really positive impact in those minutes. He probably won't win the Rookie of the Year award because, like Kel said, Oladipo seems to be the guy that's going to be eating up a lot of minutes and touches for the Magic, and that's sort of what drives the Rookie of the Year, just total scoring and stuff like that. So Oladipo would be my bet for Rookie of the Year in terms of the award. But in terms of the player that really has the greatest positive impact right away, I would say Bennett because it seems like he's going to be a key player for a potential playoff team. And then in terms of long-term for the career, I still think Noel has the highest ceiling. I'm pretty confident that he's going to come back from the injury and be an immediate impact player, at least on defense. And, you know, he has the interior skills, just like catching and finishing around the rim, to be like a really dominant pick and roll offensive player, with the way Tyson Chandler is, the way, not to the same extent, Dwight Howard, when he was with Orlando, when he would roll to the rim, he would take the entire defense with him. I think Noel has that type of ability. And the other guy I want to mention is Dennis Schroeder from Atlanta. He really tore it up in summer league. A lot of my friends on the blogosphere were for summer league, and they were reading about him all week. He seems to be a lockdown defensive player, the way Rajon Rondo is. But his shooting stroke is the biggest question. But everybody said that it looked okay in summer league, and he was making jump shots. He's making jump shots and being a dynamic scorer on offense to go along with these physical tools that he has on defense. He could be an all-star caliber point guard down the road, so he's someone to keep an eye on as well.
Yeah, it's certainly it's been an interesting draft class in Anthony Bennett. And, I think if Bynum stays healthy and if he gets enough minutes, that's certainly possible. But I think it's hard not to see Victor Oladipo winning the Rookie of the Year award just because he's going to have so many opportunities to fill up that stat sheet on a bad Magic team. He's going to get the touches. He's going to score the points. And, you know, he's been running the point and looking pretty good, so he's probably going to get the assists. He's a decent three-point shooter. He's highly regarded as a defensive player, so even if he isn't as good as, you know, scouts think he's going to be, he'll still kind of get the benefit of the doubt on that, I think, just in terms of getting awards and things like that. Honestly, I think he's going to have the best career, too. I got to agree with Kells. I don't see a potential superstar in this draft, except for maybe Bennett if he becomes the second coming of Grandma Ma and can stay healthy and can stay in shape. I think you look at Oladipo and his ability to shoot the three, defend both guard positions, run the point. If he adds a little bit of a mid-range game, can you know, do something, maybe a floater, and can become a little bit better of a slasher. I think he's the one guy that actually has a chance to become a true force on both ends of the floor. That's all the time we have for you on this edition of Taking You to School. For Jeremy Conlin and Kels Dayton, I'm Joe Perrello. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, everybody.